Hey, welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. What are we talking? We're going to be talking about so many interesting movies from the Tribeca Film Festival, including the 40th anniversary of Taxi Driver.
I'm going to move to the edge of my seat.
This movie, Colonia, which I really, really liked, with Emma Watson, who plays Hermione in the Harry Potter movies, and another movie called High Rise with Tom Hiddleston, who plays Loki,
and Sienna
Loki,
Miller.
Loki in the Thor
singular.
Movie.
Loki.
Sienna Miller. In the words of the late Bob Hope.
Yeah. So you don't want to miss this. And I'm joined, as always, by Bill Bregoli.
They let me in again.
There you go. And Bill McCuddy.
I just followed Bregoli.
And joining us periodically, and we're glad he's here this week, is from WBAI, Mike Sargent.
I'll be here all week.
There you go. So anyway, the Tribeca Film Festival closed last weekend.
And, was it supposed to, or was it just sheer boredom? Somebody just went in and locked the door.
It's a bizarre festival. I mean, how would you categorize this festival? I mean, it started out after...
admirably.
Exactly. The World Trade Center went down, and Robert De Niro, along with Jane Rosenthal, decided to start this festival to revitalize the downtown area, which was a mess. And it sort of fulfilled that objective really well. I mean, it brought people down into the area, and the festival is not that at all anymore. It's spread out all over the city. But I think it's a festival, like, in search of itself. I mean, what is the festival? As opposed to, you go to the Toronto Film Festival, and it's a buyer's market, and there's a lot of films that come out of that particular festival.
Well, you have to have premieres to have a buyer's market. You have to have things that start. For people who don't understand, just because something happens at a festival doesn't mean it hasn't been at three other festivals before.
This is true.
Toronto's more of a premier festival. Sundance is more of a premier festival. This is a greatest hits festival.
I feel bad for filmmakers sometimes when they tell me, you know, they're making a movie independently and they're trying to get it into a festival. I'm trying to get it into Tribeca. And they seem to think that if they get the movie into the festival, that they're golden,
right,
they're done.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. Go ahead.
But my point is, here's an example of a movie. First of all, there's like 200 movies at the Tribeca Film Festival, and 95% of them never see the light of day and never get distributorship. There's a movie called City Island that came out a few years ago, and that had Andy Garcia in it and had a...
That came out. That got some money.
It took a year for the movie to come out.
It's true, but there's also movies that happen there at Tribeca that... You go, what? That's playing? Like, there was a movie with Eddie Murphy. Did you know there was an Eddie Murphy movie there?
Right.
That
actually,
Mr.
the Hollywood...
Mr. Church.
The Mr. Church,
Church
that's supposed to be the Bruce Beresford remake of Driving Miss Daisy, which got a great review in the Hollywood Reporter, and then, lo and behold, the premiere happened the other night. Did you know about this? Murphy blew it off. It's Murphy and an all-white cast. The all-white cast showed up, but Murphy didn't go. So
what does he
must
play?
Think
does
it's
he
a
play
stinker.
In the movie?
The black guy. Mr. Church.
He's the black guy. And he's not really believable. No, it's supposed to be great. It's a drama. He doesn't do his shtick. He's in charge of a white family whose the mom is going to die, and so she hires him to come in and cook and clean and be, you know, part of the family. And she's supposed to die right away. I'm not giving too much away.
You saw the movie?
And she lives for quite a long time. And he becomes like their Hazel.
I didn't even know this.
So what happened?
Or their Mr. French.
Why didn't this movie? I mean, Eddie Murphy hasn't done a lot of things
lately.
Exactly. Why isn't this movie being distributed by Paramount Pictures or Warner Brothers?
I don't know what the distribution. It has a distributor, I think. I don't know what the plan is, but it was a little suspicious that he didn't show up the other night.
Well, you know, the Tribeca Film Festival, as I said a few moments ago, it has movies that debut in the Tribeca Film Festival by major studios that come out a week later, like released
this
in
is true.
Thousands
is true.
Of theaters. It has movies that you'll never hear of again. It has, you know, one-on-one talks with, you know, Kevin Bacon speaks to,
filmmaker or
Martin Scorsese or something
maybe.
Like that. You know, they have revivals of old movies. It's not, it's hard to put a handle on what the Tribeca Film Festival
That's
really
true.
Is.
It's interesting because it gets a lot of press, but like you said, it doesn't really have an identity like, let's say, the New York Film Festival, where people know it for or it's known for something. But there were some good movies there, I will say that. I mean, the other thing that they do at the Tribeca, I think that they don't do it at a number of festivals, is they really embrace this whole transmedia technology. There's always VR demonstrations and immerse yourself in the new technology of storytelling. So there's always lots of panels and things for that kind of thing going on. But I don't know if that's because it's New York and a lot of these companies are here, or that's just the way they program it.
Well, it also, you talked about old movies, and this, they took the opportunity, because it's the 40th anniversary of Taxi Driver, to do a big kind of cast reuniting, which otherwise probably wouldn't have happened, except that Robert De Niro and Martin Scorsese are the star and creator of that film.
Well, didn't they do this last year with Goodfellas?
Did they? I don't remember.
I think it was a couple of years ago.
Well, they did a Goodfellas like 25th or 30th anniversary.
So that they're really good at. And obviously, that was one of the hottest tickets in town. So for a lackluster festival to have something like that, De Niro rarely ever speaks. But you know from having interviewed him over the years.
I interviewed him on the red carpet. I did the red carpet.
When you talk to him about the Tribeca Film Festival, he lights up a little.
Yes,
and
he does.
You know, he gets, you get full sentences out of it.
Did you see anything there?
No, I'm invited, I'm credentialed, but I'm not.
Because on our show, Talking Pictures, our movie show, which is, this is the after show to that, where airs locally in New York on New York One, nationally on Time Warner Cable, where out of the 300 movies that are in your cable box, we
watch the bad movies
every
way. You don't have to.
Right, that's exactly right. On that particular show, we've done a bunch of movies that premiered at Tribeca this year. For example, we did Sky, which was the Norman Reedus, what's the actress's name from Inglourious Bastards? Diana Kruger?
Yeah, Diana Kruger.
Diana Kruger, we did that. That was at Tribeca. We did High Rise, which we'll talk about in a few minutes this week. That played at
Low
Tribeca.
Rise.
Right. There were a bunch of movies that you actually did see that played at Tribeca this particular, you know.
Well,
the Family Fang.
Things.
We did the
Family Fang.
We talked about that last week.
And but that was bought and getting ready to go into theaters this
week. Well, that's like one of the examples I told you about, you know. So it's a bizarre festival.
It is. Well, I saw a couple good things there. I saw For the Love of Spock, which was directed by Leonard Nimoy's son. And I have to say that was even better than I thought it would be. I saw Shadow World, which was based on the book. That was pretty powerful. That'll change the way you look at the world. And so there were a few things there that I think that are worth seeing, you know, especially documentaries.
Both of those things you think will get bought and find a distributor sooner or later?
I think For the Love of Spock will be bought at some point, you know, but I don't see getting a huge release.
Well, let's talk about the 40th anniversary of Taxi Driver. So I did the red carpet, and I talked to Jodie Foster, who still won't talk, by the way. I asked her a whole bunch of questions. She talked, you know, talked about how New York City has, you know, they did this 40 years ago. New York City and Times Square, if you watch that movie, was a very different place, Times Square, than it is now. I mean, they were all porno theaters pretty much on 42nd Street. And I remember going to...
And they're not there. I've looked.
And I remember going to the theater district back then, you know, 40 years ago. And if you saw a play on Schubert Alley, which is where all the, you know, the Booth Theater is and the, you know, the Music Box Theater and the, you know...
Now legitimate stages, we should say.
Yes. People. You know, I never walked on 42nd Street because if you get off at the Port Authority and walk from 8th Avenue to 7th Avenue, you're almost guaranteed to be accosted by drug dealers, prostitutes, pimps, or even get mugged. And now 42nd Street has Madame Tussauds. It has the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum.
They mug differently now. It's like $80 to get into
Madame
Tussauds.
If you're going to get accosted, by Elmo now.
There's a 25 megaplex on the south side of the street, and there's another 25 seat movie theater megaplex on the north side of the street. There's a Yankee store. There's Hello Kitty store.
Dallas BB.
There's a BB King's jazz club.
I mean, there's and all the theaters that used to be, you know, the pornographic theaters.
All cleaned up. All gentrified. All Disneyfied.
Right now you have Aladdin playing there. You know,
Goldie wants the prostitutes back.
And the new Victory Theater, which was also a porno theater, is now a children's theater. So it's a very different place. So my point is that Jodie Foster talked about filming in New York back then and being a 12-year-old and playing a prostitute. And she answered all these questions and spoke to me about how, you know, she was not that. Her mother was a little apprehensive about her playing a prostitute in that particular movie, but she was an actress. She just used it as, you know, just thought of it as another role. And Harvey Keitel, who played her pimp Sport in the movie, that they rehearsed that dance scene together. But when I got to David Hinckley, because she even gave me a lead into it, she said to me, she goes, you know, there were a lot of, you know, crazy things, you know, about that movie, because Robert De Niro played a psychotic guy, you know, and he was influenced by the world around him, driving the cab in New York, which was a perfect lead-in for me to say, which I did. And I said, speaking about being influenced, the movie influenced, you know, there was an assassination attempt by you know, basically the guy was obsessed with your character in the movie, and she shut down.
John Hinckley. Did you say David Hinckley?
Isn't it David Hinckley?
No, it's John Hinckley.
No, John Hinckley.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
News reporter.
Dave, you're thinking of David Berkowitz, maybe.
I think I was thinking, anyway.
It doesn't matter. John
But
Hinckley.
She would not. She shut down. She would not talk about it. She was like,
I used to do a joke about that in my act. John Hinckley allegedly shot Reagan
or tried to shoot Reagan.
No, but allegedly because he was infatuated with Jodie Foster and wanted to demonstrate his...
He was infatuated with the Jodie Foster character from Taxi Driver.
Right. So I said, my joke was, Jodie Foster's gay? Who's going to tell John Hinckley? He can stop digging that tunnel.
Okay, there you go. So Keitel didn't talk to anybody on the red carpet. De Niro spoke to me,
and I said, didn't talk to anybody.
No,
why?
He just waved. I don't know, but De Niro wasn't going to talk to anybody, and I flagged him down because I've interviewed him so many times over the year. And he says, "All right, I'll give you a question." If you ever see the movie,
ask him about Hinckley.
No, if you've ever seen the movie Shane. The classic movie, Shane. There is a line in Shane, and it's funny. I saw Taxi Driver in a movie theater, in the Paris movie theater in New York City when it came out 40 years ago with my mother. And I remember that I saw Shane afterwards. I saw Shane, you know, like maybe 5 years afterwards. And in the movie, at the end of the movie, Shane, Jack Palance is sitting there. Shane, you know, the kid says, you gotta kill the bad guy.
You know? Shane.
Right. So
is that how you get De Niro on the red carpet?
So who?
De Niro,
played
come
Shane?
Back.
Gary Cooper.
Alan Ladd.
Alan Ladd.
So Alan Ladd walks in to this showdown with Jack Palance in Shane. And he goes, where's whatever the name of the character is? He goes, you talking to me? Jack Palance goes, well, I'm the only one here. You talking to me? So I said, wow, this makes perfect sense. De Niro in Taxi Driver wants to be this badass guy. He buys all these guns. Jack Palance is a gunslinger, so he's trying to be a badass. He's looking in the mirror, and he's trying to be Jack Palance. He says, are you talking to me? I'm the only one here. It had to be a direct homage, steal, whatever. So I asked De Niro if he took that from Shane, and he just mocked me. He goes, yeah, I stole it from you. I stole it from Shane. So I don't know if he did or if he didn't, but he was just kind of mocking me, going like, I just made it up. I stole it.
A little bit. You know? I'm a sponge.
So I don't know. Then I asked him if he ever saw the movie in the 40 years. Has he seen the movie in 40 years, other than tonight's special screening? He goes, yes, I have. I go, what do you think? And he goes, yeah.
So another great De Niro.
It's a good movie.
Rosen De Niro.
A little bit. So he's not even giving me coherent answers, but...
you don't have the audio for this?
But No, I don't. And Sybil Shepherd talked endlessly about how she loved being in a Scorsese movie, and it was just really interesting, and working with De Niro, and he was such a master craftsman as an actor that the scenes were just effortless and all that sort of stuff.
You want a great Jack Palance story since we're killing time?
Sure.
Okay, so he comes on The Tonight Show when Jay was on it, but he's the second guest. The first guest is Phil Hartman.
This is
after the push-ups, but he's
annoyed that he's not the lead guest.
He's not the lead guest, he's the second guest. And Phil Hartman's been sitting there doing all this shtick, and I think they do two segments with Palance, and he's in the back getting wasted because by the time he comes out, you can tell he's half in the bag. So Hartman stands up and sits down, and Palance sits down, and Jay starts going into this, you can tell Palance is drunk, and if you've done a really good job as a guest, like Phil Hartman had kind of killed a little bit, you can sort of jump in and be part of the conversation, and then the director takes a three shot on The Tonight Show, and now suddenly, but it hardly ever happens. You have to be really good. It used to happen on The Carson Show all the time, but it didn't happen with Jay very much. It was one guest done, next guest.
Yes.
Now Hartman leans in and goes, you know, I've always wondered, what is it, Jack Palance or Jack Palance? You know, and the camera's wide, and everybody laughs, and Jack Palance is drunk, and he turns and he looks and he goes, I've always wondered if your name is what's his name or what's his name?
Really? Really? Wow.
That's a great comeback.
Wow.
Jack Palance.
You know, shut him down right there.
Talk shows are so over. I mean, most of the talk shows are so over rehearsed these days. It's exactly what you're saying, McCuddy, is that it's a guest, and they get their segment, and then they go off, and they go, next up, yep. Michelle Williams, right. You know what I mean? And they all get their little, but if you go back on YouTube, and you look at like an old Johnny Carson show, you type in like the Tonight Show, Johnny Carson, 1968, or Dick Cavett, all these Dick Cavett shows seems to be, or the Merv Griffin shows, nobody leaves. They all stay on the couch. Robert Klein used to have this bit where he would say, move over one seat. And it would be the original, it was a talk show. You would all talk. There is a rare interview, which is actually on YouTube, that I was listening to the other day with John Lennon and Paul McCartney on The Tonight Show, Johnny Carson Tonight Show. But Johnny was off that night, and the recently deceased Joe Garagiola was hosting The Tonight Show.
Oh, my God. So, sports guy for people who have no idea who that is.
So, basically, the biggest coup, like on any talk show in the 20th century, Lennon and McCartney sitting together for a 15-minute segment. You could ask them anything you want. You have Joe Garagiola sitting there going,
asking
how do you ever
them.
Get tired of these girls screaming and yelling at you? You know what I mean? This is what's going on. But anyway, Tallulah Bankhead, and it was her last appearance. She died like a week after she did the show. Is on the show. And it's not like today where, like, she was a previous guest. Everybody stays on the show. So the Beatles aren't, Lennon and McCartney, they're not even the lead guest on the show. Tallulah Bankhead is the lead guest on the show.
A grand dame for people who don't know who Tallulah Bankhead is.
Look at this on YouTube. It is on YouTube. So Tallulah Bankhead starts hogging the conversation and asking the most inane questions like, where did you get those shoes? are those alligator or lizard? Another kind of that. And it's like you have Lennon and McCartney, and they're asking the most stupidest questions, and everybody's chiming in like, oh, you see these are shoes. I've been wearing these same shoes for 20 days. We got cleats in baseball. And McCartney's like, oh, very nice. That's nice.
You know what's funny? I remember a show like
that. What a wasted opportunity.
Carson. I just remember where they had Rich Little on, right? And then they brought on Richard Pryor. And then Richard Pryor came out, and he says, so, Rich, you know, you don't do any black people. And Rich goes, well, you know, I guess I don't. And then Richard Pryor.
Imitations.
Yeah. He doesn't do any black people. And then Richard Pryor did his impressions. And I had never seen, he did like Sidney Poitier. I had never seen.
Really? Oh, really? I'd love to see that. I'm going to try and YouTube that.
He does.
So people understand, Rich Little was one of many people who sat in as a a guest host.
Well, no, he was
Johnny. Johnny was there?
Johnny was there.
I got to see this.
It's amazing because Rich Little, he's like, no. He goes, yes, boss. He does that, right?
Right.
And Rich Little,
Rochester.
I mean, Richard Pryor, he does dead on. I didn't know anybody could do Sidney Poitier. But ever since then, like, cool. I aped it myself. He goes, listen, man, there's something I gotta tell you.
That's pretty good.
And I'm a man. He does this whole, I'd never seen anybody.
Girl, you've been pretty quiet.
I actually met Dick Cavett once.
Did you really?
And I got to tell him a strange story. And when I was young, I was a big Avengers fan. Not the Avengers that they have now, but the Avengers with Patrick McNee and
Diane Riggs.
And
that was a good show.
McNee was guesting with Dick Cavett, and he mentioned that he was celibate. And the audience went, ooh. And I didn't know what celibate meant because I was all of 14 years old. So, I knew what it meant, but I didn't know what it meant as far as a dictionary. So I had looked it up in a dictionary. And finally, years later, I'm working with Dick Cavett. I actually had to produce a satellite tour. We talked to our stations for 10 minutes, and then he'd go on to another radio station. It was a whole radio thing. And he would not take direction. He was driving my boss crazy because we'd say, wrap up. And he'd just get going on a conversation. And it was wonderful. But finally we broke. And I said, you know, thanks to you, Mr. Cavett, I know what celibacy is. And he thought it was the most. He grabbed his assistant and said, thanks to this guy. Thanks to me. This guy knows what celibacy is.
That's funny.
Dick Cavett got his start? He actually he handed jokes. He waited for Jack Parr, who hosted The Tonight Show.
In 30 Rock, where the subway came in.
And he handed jokes that he wrote specifically for Jack Parr's monologue and said, can you read these? I wrote these for you, please. And Jack Parr read them and hired him as a writer. And that's how Dick Cavett got started. And then he became a writer on The Tonight Show. And then he wrote for Johnny, actually, originally. And
that
it's kind of
right.
funny.
That is right. He was weird wild.
Johnny
he started out weird,
any...
became wild, and then became weird again.
Johnny Carson got very mad at Joan Rivers because she was the permanent guest host to go off to Fox and do her own show. But yet he never held any animosity.
He was a little miffed at Cabot. Cabot went over to, I think it was ABC.
And he never got mad at Joey Bishop either, who was the host of the show.
Well, I don't think he saw him as a real
threat. No, but Joey Bishop got his own show also, but he was very mad.
All right, wait. I know I've been jumping in with non sequiturs all day. Can I tell you one really quick Tallulah Bankhead story?
You have a Tallulah Bankhead?
She's on Broadway. She's on Broadway in a big production of something, and this other actress keeps dropping her lines, doesn't know where to come in, and forgets her lines and stuff. And at some point, the telephone rings, and Tallulah Bankhead goes over, answers it, and says to the girl, "It's for you," gives it to her, and walks off stage.
That's great.
And left the production that night.
That's great.
All right, you want to know a piece of trivia? Do you know where Letterman got his start?
Yes, he was a weatherman in Indiana. Yeah.
But in comedy.
In comedy, he went to the comedy store.
Yeah, the comedy store, Mitzi Shore.
He used to write for Jimmy Walker.
Oh, that's
true,
his first paying gig. His first paying gig was writing jokes for Jimmy J.J. Walker.
Yeah, I think he slept on his sofa or something.
And he always, even when his career's kind of shot Jimmy Walker, but even up until Letterman gave up the show, what is it now, almost a year ago, he still would periodically, in gratitude, have Jimmy Walker as a guest on the show. When
there
nobody
were a bunch of guys
in,
like that he started out with. George Miller, George Wallace, and a guy named Tom Dreesen.
Have you guys seen that photograph of David Letterman lately?
Yeah, no.
I mean, he's bald.
He looks like Santa.
He's got a beard.
He's got a huge beard.
Fat.
He's Father
Time. He's unrecognizable.
I don't think he's gained any weight.
Oh, he looks really heavy.
Really?
Oh my
no.
God! It's like it's.
There's no fat shaming on this podcast,
should we
please.
Talk about any of these movies?
Yeah. Well, before we do, I just want to before we leave the talk show thing, I want to get back. Well, I do actually. You know, you're right, Mike. I want to talk about a movie that did not play at Tribeca that was supposed to play at Tribeca called Vaxxed. And Vaxxed is a movie about I haven't seen the movie. They're making sure that we can't see the movie. It's about the dangers of vaccinations and how vaccinations. There's a some people in the scientific community strongly believe that vaccinations in early infants and newborns lead to autism. And there are all these people. I saw the trailer. The trailer is online, where people go, "My kid was perfectly fine, and then I gave him this vaccination, and now he's acting completely different." And there is definitely a link. And De Niro spoke, which is rare.
Because
it's a rarity.
An autistic child.
Extensively about the fact that he has an autistic child, and he said that there's a link there. And Jane Rosenthal, they pulled the movie from Tribeca. So is it Big Pharma, or who is behind this that is powerful enough? Like what they said on the Today Show was that, well, a lot of the filmmakers were pulling out if they were going to show this movie. And I said, that's got to be bullshit. What filmmaker who's got their movie in Tribeca goes, "Oh, you're showing Vaxxed? I'm an unknown filmmaker.
Especially when
I'm taking that out."
Especially De Niro, who helps run the festival.
Right. So, but Jane Rose, but there's something going on here that they don't want you to see this film. And my wife, who's in the medical profession, who says everybody should really try and see this film because she also doesn't believe in vaccinations, says, or not all vaccinations, but I mean the over-vaccination of people,
I agree,
is saying that by pulling the film from Tribeca, that actually might help the film because, you know, if the
of
film.
Of course it will. What do you mean it might?
Right. The film had two showings at Tribeca, came and went. Now everybody is like, what is this movie that people
Band
are not
Tribeca.
Letting me
right.
watch?
Band.
So, in a way, maybe it's good. So now when it comes out, more people will see
this will
the
be
film.
A shot in the arm for the film. Sorry.
It helped Mel Peebles.
Sorry.
Shot in the ass.
When tried to release his film, they wanted to give it an X. So he used that as marketing because he said rated X by an all white jury, and that helped his film. Melvin Van Peebles did Sweet Sweet Backs. First blaxploitation.
The first film by a black director, most people credit it to Sweet Sweet Back, Badass Song by Melvin Van Peebles, but it actually is not.
No, it's not.
The first one.
Self-financed.
Do you know the first one? Mike is African American, by the way, in case we're on a podcast. Nobody can see us.
Yes. They know we're on a podcast. They're listening to it.
I'll give you a hint. It's a three-word title, and the first word of the title is the. It is.
It is, too.
All right, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to flip all the cards over.
Not the learning tree.
It's the learning tree.
Yeah, the learning
it's
tree.
It's the learning tree. Yeah. It's the learning
which
tree.
Which I knew.
That's true. And I had Melvin and Peebles for Black History Month about 10 years ago. I had Melvin Van Peebles in here talking about that crazy movie. And now we got
it is kind of unwatchable. It's kind of cool, but it's kind of unwatchable.
It's crazy. It's
psychedelic.
Very low tech.
Very at that time.
Anyway, I want to go back to this. I want to talk about Colonia, which... but before I do, excuse me.
He's going to have some water.
I want to leave this talk show discussion by saying something about Stephen Colbert. If you've been following the news, and if you're a fan of Stephen Colbert, and anybody who listens to this podcast or watches me on the Talking Picture Show knows that I was a huge fan of the Colbert Report. I think it was one of the most brilliant talk shows ever created. And I've been very disappointed lately with The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And somebody... a professor at Syracuse University wrote this whole thing that, and I couldn't agree more, that this show is a sad echo of the role that he was born to play, which is basically that mock conservative commentator where he was sarcastic. He did the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Right.
He was able to, by agreeing with all these right-wing people, in a sarcastic tone.
Show how ridiculous they are.
Right, exactly.
Better
fodder. It was brilliant. So now he's talking to, you know, like it's Juliana Margulies next on The Late Show. And it's just.
How about when they lie on the ground and look at the stars and do this thing that somebody must have thought was a funny bit?
Yeah, how about the thing with the big hat? That's awful also.
Yeah.
They got him a new show.
Well, that's something. So basically the show's not doing well in the ratings. And it's
Fallon's a little above Kimmel, I think.
Fallon is kicking his ass, and he's kind of tying with Jimmy Kimmel. And they brought in this guy who used to an executive producer,
the show
really had
technically.
And this guy bumped up the ratings, I believe, on CBS. Was it
the morning show?
The morning show, with Gail King and Charlie Rose. Right. So now I'm watching the show, and there are subtle changes in the show, but these changes are even worse. I mean, it's
they're doing the weather now.
Apparently the showrunner. They're saying to Stephen Colbert that in this day and age, you have to have disposable bits. 2 minutes that are watchable on YouTube and
on social media. That's what Fallon has done so well.
Right.
And
Kimmel, they want him to do
extent.
That. But the thing is, you know, if you've created one of the greatest characters in the history of television,
yes.
It would be like saying to Jackie Gleason saying, I'm not doing Ralph Cramden anymore. You know what I mean? Or Jack Benny going, I'm not going to be stingy. I'm not going to do that stingy character anymore. You know, or Seinfeld going,
But what's your solution? Have him go back to the
character? I would love for him to go back to the character.
Well, they're never going to do
that's
that.
That's a different network.
They're never going to do that.
Well, I don't know. You know, why not?
Who do you think owns that, by the way?
Well, Comedy Central is owned by Viacom, and Viacom owns CBS, so he can go do the character. But I just think it's a waste.
I think that's been done. I think it's retired in his brain, and I think he would think that was a huge step backwards for him.
I think the Colbert Report won numerous Pulitzer Prizes. It won Peabody Awards.
Everyone's agreeing with you on that.
It won Emmys. This show isn't winning that. This show is. Why try to be Fallon when you're Stephen Colbert and nobody else can do what you do?
Well, I think the answer is if you're Stephen Colbert, you think you can bring a different perspective and you're just as funny and just as talented and you can in a different way. And I think that was the. The sort of learning curve that he was doing for the first year, but it's just they book really obscure people like Elon Musk and
they've stopped doing that.
Well, I hope so because
I think
it was,
the guy is
I
brilliant.
I get the idea.
I
of
love
what,
Stephen Colbert. I miss the character, and I'm saddened to see him doing interviews.
Well, I will
with,
tell
like,
you that when they announced
people.
He was getting that show, I thought he was going to do it like Art Fearn. You were talking about Carson a little while ago, or Aunt Blabby, like as a character on the new Colbert show. I thought he would do editorials maybe as that. Character and I predicted that, and that hasn't happened yet. Would that help you if he went
that
into
would
that
help
character
me.
A little bit?
That would help me. I read somewhere that they want to try to bring the character back somehow this year in some capacity. But that would help. Yes, that would help me. That would help me get over my grief.
That'd be your quote. This helps, Neil.
All right, I want to talk about Colonia. I want to get back to the movies since this is sitting around talking movies. So I saw this movie Colonia.
Talking talk shows. That could be the other show.
I saw this movie Colonia. Bill, you took what I call the lead on it on the television show. So
I had suggested it seeing some pretty decent trailers for it. Basically, Emma Watson, who has said on the show, is trying to jump a little out of the the Hermione. Harry Potter mode and try and do something. I think she's bitten off slightly more than she can chew here. However, it's about the girlfriend of a political photographer who's in Chile covering some kind of a skirmish down there, some civil war down there. I believe in the 70s. What happens is he gets sucked into this former Nazi cult called Colonia Dignali or Dignati, and she goes sort of undercover to, as someone said, like a Charlie's Angels episode. She gets branded into this cult also, and to find him. So it's very tense. They're in this camp basically. They can't escape, and she hooks up with Daniel Brühl, her boyfriend, who is there also, believed to be rendered dumb by some torture they've given him. Again, this is a real place until the 80s. It's run by kind of a creepy Nazi guy. Michael Nyquist, is it?
Nyquist.
Who did we
Who's
do?
Very good.
What movie did we do the other week where you said I like your cough medicine? You were talking. And it was another Michael Nyquist movie. What was
I can't
that
remember.
Movie?
It was like he looked like one of
the I love your cough
Smith
medicine
brothers. But this has, I think, one of the tenses, and she's a stewardess. The escape from there involves getting on an airplane.
Really well.
As did compared it to I just blanked on Ben Affleck's movie.
Like Argo. I compared it to the Magdalene sisters. Listen, Mike, I really like
the movie too. I might agree that Emma Thompson was slightly out of her depth. It's kind of role that Rachel Weisz does often.
Yeah.
She's in the wrong place at the wrong time, but she's smart and she can get through it. I thought Daniel Brühl was really good. I think he's kind of an actor. They don't quite know what to do with him, because he's
he was good, and he plays
very good.
Without giving too much away, he plays two different types of characters.
Yes, he does.
In the movie.
Well, I said he gets tortured and then he passes himself off as dumb or
mentally challenged.
Mentally challenged.
Well,
I thought it was effective. I thought Nyquist, as a matter of fact, I wanted to see him get hurt, that character. Like, you really.
Well, he's a cult leader. He's like Jim Jones, Guyana.
Well, he's even worse because he's a child molester. He's this, he's that. He's all these awful things. And I thought there were a number of turns in the film where we meet characters, specifically the woman who's in charge of the women.
And, right.
Yes.
And you're
right.
Wondering why she's so mean, and then you see she's being abused too.
Well,
so.
Yeah. This movie is a wow for me. I mean, literally, I sat there, I didn't know what to expect, and my stomach was in knots the entire film. I mean, this is one of the most suspenseful films I've seen in quite a while. It's scarier than most horror movies that I've seen. And maybe perhaps the script is a bit implausible at times. They start off with this political thing that's going on in Chile, and they get away from that. But as a escape thriller, in a place, this place really...
It's also a love story.
This place really existed. Apparently, they harbored Nazi criminals after World War II, and you can't escape from this place, and it's a horrific.
And the Chilean government may or may not be complicit in all this, or at least know about it.
Well,
so
when the information on this came out in real life, nothing was done in Chile.
Yeah,
so.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, and
I mean, that is something
and then it
we
becomes,
learned at the end of the movie, but you're not giving anything away.
It becomes
there.
Like, I don't know if you saw a movie called The Magdalene Sisters, where for a girl's pregnant in Ireland, by the way, if you've never seen The Magdalene Sisters, rent this movie on DVD. It's brilliant. It was my favorite movie of the year it came out. And these girls are sentenced to these laundries and for nothing, and they can't escape from the laundries, and it becomes an escape tale of these two girls that did nothing and they have to get out of there. They're prisoners. And that's what this reminded me of. There are these, Daniel Brühl and Emma Watson, both of whom I think are very good here, are trying to escape from this place, and it's like the great escape. It's just great. And Nyquist, as this monstrous guy, is terrific, and so is that woman who, I don't know the name of that actress, who plays the one who's in charge of all the women.
She was really
she's making
good.
Everybody, do this, do that. Emma Watson's collapsing the fields from picking.
She also has a secret I won't give away that's kind of cool.
Right,
with
is.
The older woman?
Yeah, the older woman.
Really?
Yeah.
She has a secret?
I'll tell you after the show. She escaped you, apparently.
Okay, that escaped me, apparently. But it's a cultish hell on earth, and it really existed, and it's riveting from start to finish. And the movie's called Colonia, and it's a top-notch thriller, And I, if you're looking for a scary movie or a horror movie or just something, an escape thriller,
well, I wouldn't qualify it as a horror movie because some people
think horrifying.
It's horrifying.
It's horrifying.
It's a thriller.
It's not a horror movie with fake monsters, but there were real human monsters in this particular thing. Yes. And I recommend that. And I also recommend The Magdalene Sisters.
Now, one we can't recommend is also out this week on demand.
Oh, talk about High Rise. Sure, we've all hated High Rise.
Well, you know, the thing
it's Snowpiercer.
I didn't
vertically.
Like Snowpiercer. I thought Snowpiercer was overrated.
Yeah, I did
contrived,
too. I agree.
Ridiculous.
But most, you know, we're in the minority. People love that.
I don't love Snowpiercer. I thought it was. I thought that the first half was boring when they were in the back of the train. And then I think once they started moving up to the front of the train, it got interesting. And
so
I was
this
engaged.
Is the same story. Yeah, people haven't seen Snowpiercer. We should explain that it's about class system and how the caboose is not where you want to be on the train.
As you move further up towards the front of the train. Right. The rich people are in the front of the train, and each car, as you successively move up in the train. Bill Brigoli, how would you explain Snowpiercer?
Just what you said.
Okay. Yeah.
You did fine there, except for successfully.
It's not just coach, business class, and first class.
No.
It's like there's not, you know.
And
it's,
this high rise, we should
it's
say,
living
to
in
get
a
back
slum
to the point.
And then
is,
living in the lap of
this
luxury.
This is the exact same conceit, if, as
vertically.
I said on the show, if Trump Tower had sex with Snowpiercer.
Well, it also shows you Snowpiercer, which came out first, but this is a novel base. So clearly Snowpiercer was influenced by the J.J.
Yeah, that's true.
Novel,
yeah.
You know, and this
that's
is
true.
Essentially science fiction, but it's very much sort of a Tim Burton meets Terry Gilliam.
Yeah, Terry Gilliam or Russell.
David O. Russell.
No,
Ken Russell.
Ken Russell.
Ken Russell.
Ken Russell.
Ken Russell.
How about that penthouse? with
a
football field.
A lot of debaucherous scenes in that particular
with starring Sienna Miller, and I will say that in and of itself may be worth the price of admission for some, but even that will become boring to you.
Yeah, the whole thing was very boring
thought,
and very tedious.
Who's the actor?
Luke? High Rise. And
who played the brute?
Tom Hiddleston is the star.
Tom Hiddleston,
of the
he
and Elizabeth
played,
Moss the is there having sex with Tom Hiddleston, and she's doing a
she's pregnant
British accent, which is kind of.
I also have to say, as an odd aside, I owned a Triumph Stag, and they do more crappy things to this poor car sitting in the parking lot, including somebody committing suicide on it.
Oh my God.
But. So it was disheartening for me as a former Triumph Stag owner.
Well, this movie,
I'm sure a lot of people can relate.
So
to
I would skip High Rise. I would
so
see
many
Colonia.
Triumph Stag owners in the
and
US.
If you've never seen
Interestingly
Taxi
enough,
Driver,
Colonia sounds happened. Like it's a science fiction movie, but it's not. High Rise sounds like a thriller, but it's a sci-fi.
All right. So next
Boom.
Week on the show, Mike we're talking
drop.
About the new Captain America movie.
Oh boy,
that's right.
Can't wait.
We haven't seen it, but we are all going to see it.
We're all going to see it before we do the show next week. Are you going to see it, Bill?
I have been invited. Yet. I got to talk to Disney.
Oh, we'll
I spoke
yet.
To them about that, and they said Bill Brigoli is on our list. He was invited.
When am I seeing it?
Monday night.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that. In any event, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us, and we'll sit around talking movies with you next week.